Discover the tips and strategies that will help you achieve your retirement goals. I'm your host, James Knoll, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping you retire well. It all starts right here on Ready for Retirement. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ready for Retirement. I'm your host, James Knoll. Today, we're going to be talking about wrong assumptions people make when it comes to retirement planning, and specifically five of those wrong assumptions. And the reason for this is when we try to plan our retirement, really what we're doing is taking guesses. Now, taking guesses doesn't sound great, so we call them assumptions instead. We make assumptions about how long we will work, how much we will save, how much the market will grow by or our portfolio will grow by, what will inflation be, how long will we live, what will Social Security look like. All of these are things that we can take our best guess or make our best assumption about, but we also have to acknowledge that there's no way to know for certain what some of these things will look like. However, I do commonly see five wrong assumptions that people make about retirement. These five wrong assumptions are very easy to start to dismantle, very easy to see where the flaws are. And when we're looking at retirement planning and looking at the things we need to do to be on track for successful retirement, it's equally important to avoid wrong assumptions as it is to make good assumptions. So in today's episode, I'm going to outline five of the wrong assumptions I see people make when it comes to retirement planning so that you can make sure you're getting it right for your situation. Just a quick reminder before we jump in that if you have not already done so, be sure to check out this podcast on YouTube. It's under the Root Financial page. Under that, you'll find this episode. You'll also find other content that will help you to create that more secure retirement and to get the most out of life with your money. And also, if you haven't done so already, please be sure to leave a review. Just tap that 5-star button if you have not already done so. If you're enjoying the podcast, it really does help more people find this show. The first thing people look at when they say, what podcast am I going to listen to, is what are the reviews? People don't want to waste a whole lot of time searching through and listening to a whole bunch of episodes. So the more 5-star reviews there are, the more people are being helped on their journey to create a better retirement. So when you're doing that, you're helping the show, you're helping others, and I really appreciate it for all of you who have left a review. So let's jump into the episode. And the first of the five wrong assumptions that people make. The first is this. People assume that the stock market is the biggest risk to your retirement. Well, why do we assume that? We've all heard stories of my parents or my friends or someone was going to retire and then 2000 hit. Or and then 2008 hit. Or maybe then 2022 hit. And what people look at as they start to look at the stock market as the biggest risk or the biggest impediment to your ability to retire. Well, let's look at the numbers. Let's look back at the last 80 years so we can start to understand where this is coming from. And really before we even do that, it's easy to see where this is coming from. The stock market goes way up and it goes way down. And there's this thought that if you happen to retire in one of those years where the stock market goes way down, it's going to ruin your ability to be retired for the next 20 to 30 plus years. Well, how do we quantify that? Let's quantify it by understanding what are the worst case scenarios we can expect from the stock market. Well, if we go back the last 80 years, all the way back to the early 1940s, let's look at the worst return of the S&P 500. So we'll use that as our proxy for the stock market, the return of the 500's biggest companies in the United States. And let's also look at the worst returns for one-month T-bills. So one-month treasury bills are commonly thought of as the most conservative, the most safe investment that you can make. Well, over the last 80 years, the worst 12-month returns, the worst one-year return on the S&P 500 was it was down 43%. Starting in March of 2008 until March of 2009, the S&P 500 lost 43% of its value. Meaning if you had $1 million in your portfolio at the beginning of that, and you let that portfolio ride for the next 12 months, your portfolio balance was sitting about $570,000 12 months later. A very difficult experience to stomach. Now let's compare that to what's traditionally thought of as a safe investment. So one-month T-bills. Over the last 80 years, the worst one-year return that T-bills have ever had was they gained 0.01%. So they lost nothing. Now, they didn't make very much, but being up 0.01% is a whole lot better than being down 43% like the S&P 500 was in its worst year. Now, these are different years that we're looking at. For T-bills, this happened from August of 2014 until August of 2015, where they only gained 0.01% as the worst case scenario over the last 8 years. But as we're looking at it, you can start to see why people look at the stock market as very risky and why people look at very short-term bonds as very stable or very conservative. The worst case scenario is drastically different between the two. Well, let's zoom out real quick. What about if over the same 80-year time period, instead of looking for the worst rolling 12-month period or the worst rolling 1-month time period for each of these asset classes, what if we looked for the worst 20-year rolling time period? So all the way from the early 1940s, all rolling 20-year time periods, what's the worst the S&P 500 has ever performed in terms of an annualized rate of return? And what's the worst that the 1-month T-bill has ever performed over a 20-year rolling time period? Well, if we go back to April of 2000, that began the worst 20-year period the S&P 500 has had going back to the early 1940s. During that time, from April of 2000 until April of 2020, the S&P 500 averaged 4.8%, very much below its long-term return of about 10% per year. Now, if we compare that to the worst experience that one-month T-bills have had over any rolling 20-year time period over that same period, that same 80-year period, their worst experience ever was being up 1.14% over that same time frame. So what you can start to see is in the short term, stocks are very much risky. They're much riskier than something like a one-month T-bill or very short-term bond. But as you start to expand your time horizon, the worst case scenario in stocks over a 20-year time period was being up 4.8%, which is a lot better than T-bills that were up about 1.1% in their worst case scenario. Now, those annual return differences might not sound that different. You say, okay, it's a few percentage points, but look at the impact that has over those 20-year time periods. So if we assume we have $100,000 and we're going to invest it in both the S&P 500 and in one-month T-bills over their worst ever 20-year rolling time period, and worst ever at least within the last 80 years, what we're looking at is this. The S&P 500, which compounded at 4.8% over its worst 20-year time period, $100,000 invested there grew to about $255,000 by the end of that 20-year time period. Now we compare that to $100,000 invested in one-month T-bills over their worst 20-year time period in the last 80 years, that only grew to $125,000. So what we can start to see here is this stock market that, yes, it is very risky in the short term. Once we expand that to 20 years, the growth on an investment in the S&P 500 was more than 6 times the growth on the investment of a one-month T-bill over both of their worst 20-year returns over the last 80 years. Again, the growth on the S&P 500, if we look at $100,000 growing to $255,000, $155,000 of that is just growth. Compared to one-month T-bills, the growth was only $25,000. So even in a really horrible year for stocks, really horrible 20 years for stocks, what we can see is it starts to handily outperform the worst case scenario for bonds. So when people look at the stock market as the biggest risk to their retirement, that tends to be the result of short-sighted thinking. Yes, the stock market is a risk. Yes, you need a plan to address that. But if you're so focused on that you start fully avoiding the stock market in exchange for very conservative investments like T-bills, which as we've seen have never had a negative one-year experience, well, what you start to do is you start to eliminate the risk in the short term, but only by taking on a tremendous amount of risk in the long term. Now, this ties into the second wrong assumption that I see people making. And that second wrong assumption is people ignoring the impact of inflation. Well, what we can see here in this example we just ran, if we want to take that a step further, we looked at what if you invested $100,000 in the S&P 500 during its worst 20-year time period versus what if you invested $100,000 in T-bills during their worst 20-year experience. What's not factored into that whole equation is what about inflation? We're just looking at growth on these investments, but that's a nominal return. What is the real return once you factor out inflation? Well, if we go back to taking $100,000 and saying, what if you could invest $100,000 in inflation? Meaning, what if you get the rate of return that inflation would have grown by? Well, $100,000 turns into $180,000. Translation, what that means is you would need $180,000 at the end of 20 years to maintain the same purchasing power that you have today with $100,000 if inflation increases by 3% per year. So once we start to understand this, we can see that the previous example we just looked at becomes even more pronounced, where 1 month T-bills growing to $125,000, that's a positive nominal return, but it's a negative real return. If we need $180,000 just to make up for inflation, assuming we start with $100,000, well, if T-bills have only grown to $125,000, yes, the dollar balance has grown, but the real return is actually negative. We have lost money in a real sense when investing in T-bills over the worst 20-year time period when compared to inflation. Now, with stocks didn't do great over their worst 20-year time period, but they at least grew to about $255,000, which at least maintained your purchasing power and then some. So if you ignore the impact of inflation, you're ignoring a huge aspect of your retirement plan. For some additional perspective or color here, if you assume a 30-year retirement, so maybe you retire at 62 and you or a spouse lives until age 92, well, if inflation runs at 3%, which is about what it's returned historically, inflation will make the cost of everything increase by about 2.5 times. So $100,000 of expenses turns into $243,000 of expenses by the end of a 30-year retirement. Or in other words, the same things that you could buy today for $100,000, it will take about $243,000 to buy those same exact things, those same exact goods and services 30 years from today if inflation grows by 3%. Now, inflation's been a lot higher than that recently, so I think people's natural question is, well, what if inflation doesn't get to 3%? What if it's higher? Well, if it's 4%, then inflation takes $100,000 and it turns out to $325,000. So to maintain the same purchasing power you have today with $100,000, you would need $325,000 20 years from today to maintain purchasing power, assuming a 4% inflation rate. Now, what's inflation actually going to be? Who knows? But the point is, when we ignore it, when we neglect to take into account the impact of inflation, that's where retirement planning can go really wrong, because we start looking at the nominal numbers in the future, not thinking about the actual real numbers, which is what's the inflation-adjusted equivalent of some of these numbers we're looking at today. The third wrong assumption I see people make about retirement is they assume that they can rely upon two incomes forever. Now, this is a not-so-fun aspect of retirement planning. If we think about retirement, we envision the fun things that we want to do. What we're not often thinking about is reality. And the reality is, if you have a spouse and you go into retirement, you're probably not going to pass at the same exact time. Typically, one spouse is going to predecease the other. Sounds obvious enough, but what are the implications of that? Well, the implications of that are that you're probably going to lose one income source at some point in retirement. Now, obviously, the value of human life is so much more than just an income source, but from a planning perspective, this is something that we have to take into account. Let's look at an example. Let's assume that you and a spouse are both retired and you're living on $8,000 per month. And today, you can do that pretty comfortably. Let's assume that you have a Social Security benefit of $3,000 per month and your spouse has a Social Security benefit of $3,000 per month. On top of that, let's assume that you have a portfolio of $500,000. If we assume a 5% withdrawal rate, that's about $2,000 per month. So if we assume $3,000 and $3,000 from Social Security, $2,000 per month from your portfolio, I'm obviously not taking into account taxes here, just to use a very simple example, but the combination of those things, Social Security for you, your spouse, and then portfolio, you have $8,000 per month. Well, that's great, but what happens if one spouse predeceases the other? Well, in this example, Social Security would be cut in half. Now, if one of you had a larger Social Security benefit than the other, the surviving spouse would simply take the survivor's benefit, so the higher of those two. But if it's exact same Social Security benefits, that benefit would be cut in half. So what happens is the $8,000 per month that you had, that gets condensed down to $5,000 per month. Now, you can't just look at your portfolio and say, okay, well, my portfolio will make up the difference. Well, no, your portfolio is bound by certain sustainable withdrawal rates. It can't just start creating more income magically because you now need more income from it. Now, if you had more than $500,000, or if you were previously taking less than 4 to 5% from your portfolio, of course you can start to take more out from your portfolio to supplement the difference. But if you're already at the upper threshold of a sustainable withdrawal rate, what you have to plan for is what would life look like if your income got cut in half. Now, you may look at this and say, well, expenses will be cut too. That's absolutely true. So this isn't just a proportional, okay, income's cut and expenses stay the same. Yes, income is cut. Some expenses will certainly go away, some will not, but you also have to keep in mind your tax bracket is going to be condensed. So the surviving spouse is going to have a lower tax bracket to work within because they'll no longer have the benefit of filing married filing jointly, which has larger tax thresholds before you start getting up in the higher tax brackets. So just something to be mindful of. This is going to apply to everyone's situation a little bit differently, but the wrong assumption is to plan for two incomes forever because those incomes can and will change. This applies to things like Social Security. This applies to things like pensions, things that have some definite endpoint once someone passes. What it doesn't apply to as much is a portfolio. So portfolio withdrawal rates are going to be the same, whether it's for a single person or a married couple. This isn't necessarily going to apply to real estate income because the assumption would be if one of you passes away, the surviving spouse continues to receive the same amount of income. But any income sources that you have, though, can and will change if one spouse passes away. You need to make sure you have a plan for that because the wrong assumption I see people making is that those income sources will both be there forever. The fourth wrong assumption I see people make about retirement is that their home is a great retirement asset. Now, this is not a conversation about whether real estate's a good investment or not. That's a different topic for a different day. This is all about whether it's a great retirement asset. Now, if you have a rental property, that could be a great retirement asset, but the home you live in is not. What's the difference? Well, the difference is cash flow. Retirement comes down to cash flow. Do you have sufficient income to meet your expenses? You have to look at everything from the context of, does this increase my income or does this increase my expenses? Well, a rental property increases your income. You have cash flow from it. That's income to your bottom line that you can then live on. Your primary home, on the other hand, it doesn't generate any income, and in fact, it generates expenses. The reason I bring this up is I'll talk to people and they say, oh, we feel very prepared for retirement. Look at our net worth. Our net worth is $2 million or $3 million or whatever it is. And that sounds like a good, healthy amount. And it is a good, healthy amount. But sometimes I'll look at the makeup of that and the majority of it is in a primary residence. And I'll ask them, I'll say, okay, well, do you ever have any intentions about selling this primary residence? And if they say yes, that's one thing because then that illiquid asset becomes liquid and you can live on the proceeds. But if they say no, it's not to say it's a bad asset, but it's a bad asset to be able to live on in retirement. You can't draw income from an illiquid asset like real estate. You either have to rent it out, you have to sell it, or you have to somehow refinance it. But you're not going to be able to just live on that property unless you do one of those things. So a home can be a wonderful asset. And depending on when you bought your home and where you bought your home, there's a good chance your home is appreciated in value quite a bit. But it does not matter how much appreciation that home has, unless you plan to sell it or somehow start to generate and extract cash flow from it, it's not a good retirement asset. In fact, the more it appreciates, the worse of a retirement asset it sometimes is, because that might mean that property taxes are also increasing with it. And if we go back to that cash flow framework of, is this either creating income or creating expenses, it's just creating expenses. Not to say homes are bad. Everyone's going to have a home, whether they buy it or rent it or whatever it might be, but we need to think about it in the proper context. A home can be a wonderful asset, but a horrible retirement asset. So understand the difference between the two. A retirement asset is something that generates cash flow that allows you to step away from work and have passive income coming in to support your needs. Your home does not fit that description. So make sure that as you're looking at your home, you're not wrongly assuming that that's a great retirement asset that's somehow going to contribute to your plan, unless, of course, you intend to sell it. And the fifth and final wrong assumption I see people make about retirement is that they will love not having a job. Now, there's not really financial implications for having this as a wrong assumption, but there's absolutely personal implications for this. If we spend so much time and energy and effort preparing our finances and understanding when Social Security is going to come into play and understanding how much income can our portfolio can create and understanding Roth conversions and all these things that are going to make the financial side work out great. If we don't think about the personal side, though, we're setting ourselves up for failure. And the assumption just being, oh, I can't wait to get out of work. Work is so stressful. Work is so much time. You're probably going to feel pretty darn good when you step out of that for a number of weeks, maybe even a number of months. But if you haven't thought about what you want your retirement to look like, what you want your days to look like, what you want your routine to look like, what you're going to do to add meaning and purpose and fun to your retirement, you might be sadly disappointed. So as much as we focus on the financial side, as much as you focus on what needs to be done to get you there financially, we also need to spend time thinking about what do we want this next season to look like to ensure that this is one of the best seasons of our life. So don't just assume that not having a job, not having that responsibility will somehow be the answer to all of life's issues. It can help, but only if you've done the hard work of understanding what do you want that next season of retirement to look like so that you can ensure it's everything you want it to be. So those are five of the wrong assumptions I see people make about retirement. And again, to summarize, the first wrong assumption is the stock market is the biggest risk to your retirement. The second one is people ignore the impact of inflation. The third one is people rely upon two incomes forever. The fourth one is people assume that your home is a great retirement asset. And then the fifth one is people assuming they'll love not having a job without thinking about what comes next. So I hope those are helpful. As we design our retirement plans, as we think about the future, it's important to know what is the correct assumption to make. And again, it's also important to know what wrong assumptions we need to avoid. So I hope that was helpful. Thank you as always for listening, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Ready for Retirement podcast. If you're looking to work with a financial advisor that cares deeply about helping you get the most out of life with your money, head over to our website at rootfinancialpartners.com and click start here. One of our advisors would love the opportunity to speak with you. You can also find the show notes for today's episode on our website, along with other great content that will help you to create a wonderful retirement. And finally, if you have a question that you'd like for me to answer in a future episode, then from our website, click on the Learn tab. Scroll down just a bit on that page and then click Submit a Question to submit a question that I will answer in a future episode. Again, that can all be found at rootfinancialpartners.com. Thanks as always for listening, and I'll see you next time.